Blog Talk Radio.
Hey there, hey everybody, this is Dan Duccino, and this is Bad Company that you are listening to with Gray Eye Smith and Dan Duccino. Gray, are you with me tonight? Don't know if Gray is on or not.
I'm here. Hi Daniel, my phone wouldn't unmute.
there you are. Actually, I was wondering, I was getting a little nervous for you, but hey, you're here. I'm so glad you're here, Gray. Excellent.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I unmuted you, because I figured you'd catch the drift, which you did. So thank you.
Yeah, no worries at all. Yeah, so great to hear you. I just want to do a quick plug for the opening song. That was Haley Reinhart with a song called Let's Start. She's got a lot of albums out, but she has this one album called What's That Sound, which is very interesting because she basically made a late 1960s, 70s hippie album. She's got a bunch of cover songs from that era, and then she has the songs like I played Let's Start, which is like an original album. She's a great, very talented singer. Check out her music, and she's also doing a worldwide tour right now. So definitely check her out on all different social medias, and you'll be able to see her, hopefully see her live. Again, that's Haley Reinhart. So thanks for writing that song, Haley, and letting us play it. But anyway, I'm very excited to do our show tonight, Gray. And we might actually have another guest star with us, I think.
Yes, we do. We actually have Weaver of Dreams, a.k.a. Katie McDonald. Hello, Katie.
Hello, my darling. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And how are you?
Well, what else would I be doing at 3 o'clock on a Saturday morning but speaking to my two favorite people? That's
right. What would you possibly be doing? Like sleeping, exactly. That's what I was going to say. I never knew. It's the first time I heard your last name, McDonald, so I would not, I would think that would be Irish, but I won't insult you by saying you're Irish. You're actually Scottish, so there we go.
Well, it wouldn't be an insult. It wouldn't be an insult because I have Irish in my blood as well, so we're okay.
Okay, good, good. Me too. I'm half Irish and half Italian, so there you go.
Wonderful combination.
Yeah,
well,
exactly. Well, that's Boston, you know.
Sorry. I'm half Irish, half Indian.
Wow.
Half Native, I guess.
Wow, that's great. I love this. I'm a mongrel too.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I'm telling you.
Yeah,
the Irish show
here. Right, yeah.
Exactly. All right, that's it. We're going to have an Irish, some sort of an Irish contest we'll have to do and talk about those roots.
Okay.
Yeah, my relatives are from Cork and Limerick.
Nice.
I've actually traced some of the, I've got some pictures and I've kind of traced some of them back to there. My mother, you can't get any more Irish. Her name was Mary Louise McDermott. So that's about as Irish as you can get. She you can see pictures of me. I'm big, tall, 6'4", you know, black hair, look Italian. But my mother was 5'6", strawberry blonde, freckles, weighed like 110 pounds, you know.
Wow.
Typical Irish. But that's Boston, the Italian. Southy Boston, right, is all the Irish, and then they got the North End. So it's a lot of Irish-Italian mix around here.
Yeah, cool.
But anyway, so we got all kinds of Tom is on the board. Hey, Tom, great to see you on the board. I haven't heard from you in a long time personally, so great to see you on there.
Absolutely.
And Tom actually might call in. I heard a rumor that Tom might actually call in to read, but I'm not sure. But no pressure, Tom. You certainly don't have to, but we'd love to hear from you.
Oh, yes.
And so we have tonight, we have a bunch of the front page picks with Louie Wilder was kind enough to bring over. And let us share on the show here tonight, right? So I think we got a bunch going on here. I don't know if you guys want to get started already. Never too soon, right?
I've got one up already.
Absolutely.
Oh, you do?
I do. It's
excellent.
Bon Appetit by Keith Pilthorpe. Daniel, would you care to read this for us, please?
Actually,
Absolutely.
Before you get going, Daniel, I'd like to welcome Thomas B. to the show. Hello and welcome to the show, Thomas. Hello, Thomas.
On mute.
Damn, we got some
Hello.
Mutation problems.
Thomas
tonight.
B. Hello.
Can you hear me?
Hello,
just
Thomas
barely,
B.
Tom. I heard you just a little bit, Thomas. You're way in the background. Right,
maybe try calling
started,
back.
Yeah. We'll get started while he's figuring it out. Thomas, definitely call back. So this is by Keith Pallathorpe. It's our first one, front page pick from October, and this is Bon Appetit. To satisfy is of a common piece, whatever appetite may be in play. We live because our appetites fulfill the needs of our mute bodies day by day. To hunger is not gluttony itself, to thirst not profligate upon its face. The grave will claim its tenants soon enough, and earth serve up another in its place. But love will leave a hunger for the loved that will not be assured by loving more, but feeds upon the loving to increase, the need that knows no sating evermore. So appetites stand not as of a piece. Some live a life that knows no unclear, no clear surcease. End poem.
Well, great read, Daniel. And what did you think, Katie?
Oh, this is a very interesting write. I love the fact that they're saying basically your appetite is normal, whatever you fancy, you know, is normal for you. But hunger that's not fed can feed on itself. And that would be horrible. I probably got it all wrong, but you know me, I look into things differently from everybody else. But I did think it was wonderfully written, and every stanza was beautifully put together. Sorry, I'm reading at the same time. I shouldn't. So yes, beautifully done. I really enjoyed this piece, and thank you for sharing.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And I'd like to welcome Thomas B. back. Hello, Thomas.
Hello.
Are you there?
Can you hear me now?
Hi.
Can you hear me now?
We can, yes. Great to have you on
yes,
the show.
Thomas. Hey, man.
Hi, Thomas.
Did you get a chance to hear Daniel read that poem?
About half of it. I like this one because he plays very well with that whole idea of where are our limits to things that we are always going to feel and be, and many times be driven by, like love and hunger. And so where is the balance? I mean, so appetites stand not as of a piece. Some live a life that knows no clear secrets. I mean, how do you know? I think it's a delightful sort of tease to the intellect.
Great comment. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Thomas. Yeah, I enjoyed it. You know, it speaks to not just the hunger of living, but the hunger of loving. You know, we all crave that love to be sated by the love of somebody who cares for us, you know. Some appetites stand not as of a piece. Some live a life that knows no clear surcease, which is fantastic writing. It was a brilliant pen, and thank you so much for sharing, Keith. Daniel, you did a fabulous job of reading it. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, it is definitely interesting, and it's a simple poem at first glance, but I actually think it's very deep, and there's a lot to this looking back at it. It's multi-layered, which Keith is good at, well-deserved front-page pick. And there is a difference between, you know, appetite and hunger and gluttony and all of that. Everybody has hungers and desires and all of that, but to let it get out of control, gluttony is a totally, totally different thing. And really interesting, where was it here that he said, thought it was interesting the way he said that, you know, when people pass away, like someone else comes to take their place, which I thought was really interesting. You know, I was reading, I don't want to start off getting glum here, but I was reading that interesting fact that somebody said, like 100 years from now, strangers will be living in your house, you know, and possibly wearing your clothes and your things, you know, if your stuff gets, you know, sold off and whatever. And I just always thought that was interesting. You know, I spent so much time fixing up my house, and you're cleaning it and you're doing all these things, and then, you know, 100 years from now, somebody else is going to live here. And probably a stranger, probably somebody we don't know. So, you know, another in his place. I thought that was a really, really interesting one. But it was great. It was a really, really great one by Keith. Enjoyed it immensely.
Great comment, Daniel. Thanks so much. I'm sorry, Katie, what was that?
I was just going to say I've got the next one up. I'm sorry, it was a gap, so I thought I'd jump in.
Okay.
So the next one is Osama. You got it? The next one is Osama Cuba. And I will read this one. So this is called Remembrance by Osama Cuba. A sparrow of the east, break your cage, rebel against man's iron chains. Rise above human malice, be born again in night's deep eyes. And when the morn casts its light, travel with the wind, facing the sun. Fly free into new horizons, span the summit of the mind. Nothing on earth can hold you behind. You shall be remembered by those who pray with words. End poem.
Excellent, excellent read. And this is interesting. There's a lot of liner's notes to everybody. I won't read all of them, but basically this is based on Marie Ellis Zaid, she wrote in her liner notes, or May, who's a key Lebanese-Palestinian figure in the Arab literary scene in the early 20th century, who firmly established herself as a vibrant female voice in what was clearly a man's world. A very young journalist, and she had many admirers. She did not entertain any suitors, never married because she's only in love with one man, another Lebanese poet. She wrote this about her, and she wrote it both in, for those following along, both in Arabic and English. So really, really interesting, and you know, there were times I hate, Katie, I don't know how much, you know, you see it where you are being the woman, the female representative on this show tonight. But it is interesting. My wife was telling me, just noticing the other day, that it was, what year are we in? It was only like 70 years ago when women actually couldn't get loans at banks in the United States, you know,
right.
And only a few years before that when they couldn't vote. They couldn't own property back whenever, and it's just amazing that that's how that is. I remember when I first started working in the 80s, where how prejudiced things were then. My father, we were talking earlier about me being Italian and Irish. My father telling me that he was told outright that he's not going to get any father up in the company because he's Italian and Catholic. And I had an aunt who was actually the first foreman, the first like second level manager in what is now AT&T, Ma Bell, the big telephone company. She was the first one, and she was harassed, and it was just a weird thing. It's just such a weird time, you know. And now, I'm happy to say, because I think it's, you know, everybody should be treated equal, obviously, is that. In my job, everybody above me is female, and that honestly would have been very rare back 60 years ago. So you know, I can imagine her at her time. What's the science fiction writer? Andre Norton. Andre Norton is actually a female science fiction writer. I don't know if anybody knows who Andre Norton is. She's female. She literally took that name because she thought she would get as many readers with a female name. Unfortunately, you know, so this young woman, you know, being in that time, I think was very brave and a pioneer. So beautiful. I love Asena's work, and I thought this was really beautiful and well written. And I love to see things in two different languages. So excellent job. Thomas, Let's go with you.
Well, the opening of this speaks to the entire poem and to the entire state. I mean, break your cage, rebel against man's iron chains. Did you hear the news recently that the woman champion chess player refused to go to Riyadh and defend her title because she goes, I can't go anywhere without having a male escort. I can, and listed all the things you can't do in Saudi Arabia. And she said, I refuse to go to a place that won't treat me as an equal. I thought it was great. I mean, more power to that woman. I first became concerned with women's lib when I was 14 and discovered that this is 1964. When my mother was the top credit investigator at her bank and made less than a starting male teller.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah.
Craziness.
You know, I mean, and I could go on because I'm 73 now. And I watched a lot of this transition being born from 1950 and being involved in civil rights and being spat on when I was 12 by somebody who didn't believe in integration. I laugh about some of this because you think it's somehow phenomenal and it was the norm. Be afraid. And I mean this quite honestly, be afraid, because there are far too many people in this universe who would like to turn back the clock.
Mm-hmm.
It's 100% true, 100% true. It really is. Great, great comment.
Look at her, and what she's saying here, and she's speaking to how the human spirit will find a way to be free no matter what.
Yeah.
I get it. There are far too many who build cages to keep it from being free.
Excellent
mm-hmm.
point. Thank you, Thomas. Gray, let's go to you.
Yeah, you know, I agree with Thomas about, you know, society having its rules against women rising and holding them down and, you know, like you said, you know, having a higher position but being paid less than the starting man at a lower station. And, you know, that's just tragic that that happened. But, you know, hopefully most of that's behind us with women having power in places that, you know, that they've never had before. And that's a changing, you know, that with the new millennium. So fantastic comment, Thomas, and a great read, Weaver. Excellent read, Esma.
Absolutely. And now our female representative here, Weaver, I bet you have some stories from the past. But what did you think about the poem as well?
Well, my stories from the past have been heard already. Suffice to say, I started work at 50 and a half and was paid less than the men I was training. So, I've had it firsthand, so I understand exactly how this wonderful lady feels. It is hard. We are at a physical disadvantage to start with because, you know, we're the only ones who can have the children. So that kind of puts us slightly below, yeah, already. We can't employ you because you might become pregnant. Oh, I don't think so. So I can understand exactly how she feels. It was never an easy run for any woman. I then went on to be a manager of an electronic technical department with 35 men in it. And believe me, they didn't like it.
Yeah.
So she knows what she's talking about, this lady. Beautifully written and very well done.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment. All right, where are we to next?
Okay, gentlemen, we have to decide who's doing what here. I will just put the next one up when we're all finished talking. That will make it so much easier for everybody, I think. So the next one up is Fashionista Don't Care Too Much for Florida by Shannon Norman. And Thomas, would you like to read this for us, please?
Oh, certainly.
Thank you.
Malls are just a place to show off. Or walk up for lunch you just ate. Nobody cares about clothes or fashion in Florida. It's damn.
Thomas, we're losing you on the vocals a little bit. I think you're kind of fading.
If you like a big walk-in closet and looking to Vogue, you won't like Florida very much.
Thank you, Thomas. Thomas, we lost you a little bit on that, so I don't know if you can check your connection a little bit while we're getting comments.
I think the speaker is not picking up much, and I have to stay really close to it.
Okay, no problem. Greg, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, that was a great read, Thomas. But, you know, I could see this as a fact, you know. Fashionistas don't care too much for Florida because all they wear is bikinis. You know, there's no fashion there to be had, except for bikini fashion, which doesn't do, you know, the world a whole lot of good when it comes to the sense of fashion. You know, there's no dresses, there's no coats, there's no, you know, the typical fare that you'd have with fashion. So I thought it was a great pointer, you know, into the insight of a fashionista in Florida. And, you know, I thought it was great. So you did a fantastic read with it as well, Thomas. So thank you so much for that.
Thanks, Gray. Absolutely. Yeah, this is interesting. It's kind of a fun little take. She said in the sarcastic, bitter comment on her notes, she said, I wonder how good these chicks would look in a Burger King uniform. I wonder if they would get my burger right. No onions, no pickle. Is $10 per hour enough? It would only take you 2 days to pay for that bikini. So, yeah, interesting take and kind of just a fun little sarcastic play on Florida and fashion and some of the stereotypes, you know, that you can see on the beaches down there. So, yeah, it was a lot of fun and interesting, Aurora. I liked it. Kate, what do you think?
Oh, I think I'd like to meet this lady. She's very good. I like it. I love the little sarcastic take on everything, and especially the notes in the AN. That was so cool. I can see it. I mean, can you imagine? All you need is a bikini and a beach towel. Flip the neck. That must be warm. No, I don't like warm. That's a very well-written, enjoyable, funny, and interesting poem. And I'm going to read more of Ahura's stuff because it's brilliant. Thank you.
Thank you, Weaver. Yeah, Florida's way too warm for me. I'm up in Massachusetts, as you all know here, and I've gotten off of planes in Florida before. You open up the doors, it's like walking into a blanket of humidity.
Yeah.
And you got to read it, Thomas? What do you think?
Oh, I thought he was in many ways spot on. I grew up in a number of beach communities. It was a little bit farther north, like Virginia Beach and California and those areas. But you find that it's the closest you ever get to fashion are the wraps that they put on for evening wear. The rest of it, they're too busy, you know, playing in the sun and sort of, in a sense, the younger crowd sort of flashing each other in many ways without being caught at it. I mean, to me, the beach is an incredible tease for as much as I love the ocean and I'm devoted to being on the waterfront.
Excellent. Thank you, Thomas. All right, where are we going to go now?
Now we have Growing Pains by Casey Day. And I will read this one. Okay, Growing Pains, Casey Day. I've never fallen into love. I always dove into it head first. I never felt the heat of summer, only the unsettling thirst. When passion comes a knocking, I never thought about it twice. With a pretty poker face, I'd smile and roll the dice, because I never knew of love without the sting of sacrifice. End poem.
Excellent read. And I'm definitely a fan of Casey's poems. And, you know, I like her rhymes. She does rhymes, but this one's right on. I love the feel of it. It's great. And really interesting, just the growing pains. So I don't know if this is, you know, based on her youth or just a fabrication, but you can really feel the sting and the loss of love. You know, and I really like the end line, kind of the end two lines kind of sum it up, because I never knew of love without the sting of sacrifice. So you know, hasn't found maybe that perfect love yet, you know, and has always had some sort of, you know, it always came with issues so far. And, you know, so I thought it was really, really beautiful feel. It was fun and just well written. Like I said, the rhyming and the composition of it is just kind of perfect. Like this is a, but like lyrical, musical, right? Like this could be a chorus in a song. In fact, it would probably make a really great chorus of a song. So, Casey, if you're listening, write the verses too, and we'll make a song out of it. So, yeah, I thought it was great. Really beautiful written, beautifully written. Well done. Thomas, let's go to you.
Well, this is sort of a sharp, cynical voice about love, because she makes a great point about how it's never perfect. I mean, you're not perfect. Think you're doing it. We all play the game of trying to be a little bit more of what the person wants than we actually think we are. And so there's always that sense of sacrifice. And I used to work with teens, and I used to point out that, you know, we all think we know how to fall in love. But the first problem is that we shouldn't be falling. We should be walking. And the second is that love just gives us the energy for the relationship. There's a thing called relationship that most of us don't have a clue how to operate. So I think she's right on the money, and she hits it really, really well.
I agree wholeheartedly, Thomas. And I'd like to make a comment. You did a great job of reading it, Weaver. But, you know, it's a powerful brevity. You know, it says so much in so few words on the subject of love and, you know, all it is. And I really liked the way she closed it, because I never knew of love without the sting of sacrifice. You know, I mean, we put so much forward into a relationship that, you know, we risk it all, you know, and that's a lot of sacrifice to put in the face of love. So a great write, Casey Day, and an excellent read, Weaver.
Thanks for jumping in there, Gray. I was talking away a storm and I was on mute, so I'm glad you jumped in to take care of that. I have a mute problem. I end up making noise and not muting, and then I mute and I forget I'm on mute. So, thanks,
yeah.
Greg. And Weaver, you did a great job reading it. What do you think?
I thought this was fabulous. I really did. So good and so true. I mean, it's not an easy thing. It's a trust thing. You know, you've got to trust the person that you then decide that you're going to give your heart to. And sometimes it's a bad mistake. But I can't talk about relationships because I am really bad at it. So, no, I wouldn't talk about them. I'm not very good at doing that kind of stuff. But I thought this was lovely. I thought this was very clever. And I like everybody else, I loved those last two lines, because I never knew of love without the sting of sacrifice. By golly. There speaks a heart that's been jumped on a couple of times, I think. Beautifully done, Casey. I really enjoyed this. Thank you.
Very cool. All right. Take us places, Katie.
No problem. Now we have Alternator by Self Rising Mojo. Whatever. I don't know. Okay.
You got it right.
Did I?
The second try was good.
Thank you. It could have been anything, honestly. I could have called them Joe. All right. Gray, would you care to read this for us, please?
Sure. We have Alternator, a self-rising mojo. Older is trying to dress, a walk of chance, a walking chance of rain, fit over fashion, overcast can be a disappearing act if care is not taken. When choosing a color, one has to wonder what the gray of early morning fog becomes when as it's lifted. The heat suggests light getting through a window, or better yet, resting on the highest branch of the maple serving a Merlot with most of its leaves. The jazz in a good start for knees, but not pirouettes in any stretch of imagination, not ripped meniscus either. It's more the way a crescent moon grins for no other reason than being dumb as a rock, stunning itself on a dark beach of night, only to wake feeling skipped across the rising tide by something young like another day and nearly as strong as a next sip of coffee. End poem.
Excellent read, Gray. And this is really interesting. And this is one I'll have to read a couple of times here, but I liked a lot of the lines. And my alternator, I'm almost kind of thinking of this different, the different ways that the world takes us is the way I kind of got this. First of all, I just like the old line is interesting. Older is trying to grass, a walking chance of rain, fit over fashion, overcast. I thought that was really interesting. And it is true. When you get older, it's kind of, it gets more about the little things. First of all, when you get really older, just trying to do the little things can be tough, but it's more about kind of those, you know, concentrating on those little parts as opposed to like, you know, when you're your 30s and 40s and you're just working, you do everything, all the basic parts of life, even eating and sleeping is like it's something extra you do. You know, I watch all these, it's something I know, I'm getting a little off tangent here, but it's something I always never wanted to do. I watch these people that I work with sometimes who are like literally shoving food down their throat while they're on a meeting, like as they push mute. And then I hear them talking about, oh, I tried to get a couple hours sleep last night. It's like eating and sleeping is like something that interrupts their day. It's kind of crazy. And as you get older, you kind of, you know, learn to kind of understand those things. But I like the back and forth. So alternator that he says here with all the different way, the different, kind of things that can happen throughout the day and how you kind of go back and forth between different ideas and you're on one thing and then all of a sudden you're on another thing. Some really interesting imagery here. And I like the way it alternates back and forth. So excellent job. Self-rising mojo. Let's go to you, Greg.
Yeah, I enjoyed it too. I mean, I like the metaphor and the imagery throughout the poem. One has to wonder what the gray of early morning fog becomes as it's lifted. The heat suggests light getting through a window, or better yet, resting on the highest branch of a maple serving a Merlot with most of its leaves. You know, it's a powerful poem. It's short and sweet and to the point, which is fantastic. So a great write and a fabulous to read it.
Absolutely. And let's go to Thomas.
My whole thing is I've reached a point in life where the only thing I care about is my own comfort. If I'm getting dressed, whose approval do I need, really? And is it going to make any difference in my, you know, where I go in business? If somebody, now that I'm retired, I don't care. But at the same time, you live in this world and you begin to value the things around you. And he plays this game of using images about things that are transient and things that are permanent. The sun, the leaves, good music, you know, and the way it moves you and the things that delight you, and yet at the same time, the things that have been here forever, they're like the moon. You know, how many people really pay attention to them anymore? And sometimes, you know, all that matters is your next sip of coffee, just how strong it makes you feel. There's an underlying sort of wry humor in all of this. At the same time that he's really playing a rather fanciful game using wonderful metaphors to question, you know, what is important here? How much does age really make a difference? And how much are you going to change as you grow? I guess there's a lot going on, and it's quite a delight to read or to listen to. So thank you much.
Absolutely. Thank you, Thomas, for your comment. Thomas, you can just check your connection again. You're fading in and out just a little bit. And Kate, let's go to you.
Well, as the oldest person here, I have to say I envy the mind of this particular poet. If I could write lines like, oh, my goodness, a crescent moon that grins for no other reason than being dumb as a rock, sunning itself on a dark beach of night, only to wake feeling skipped across the rising tide by something young like another day and nearly as strong as the next sip of coffee. That is magnificent. That is just so, so clever. I love this. I can see why it would be a front page pick. It is so damn good. Am I allowed to say damn? Yes, I am. Yes.
Yes, you are.
Thank you. Brilliantly done, Self-Rising Mojo, and I love your handle. Thank you.
Yes, as the self-proclaimed oldest person here, you can say whatever you want. You're entitled to that, so not a problem, Keith.
Thank you. Thank you.
All right, cool. Now, where do you want to go?
Right. Next one up is For Katie Poor by Ken Smith. And Daniel, would you like to read this for us, please?
Of course, of course. Let me get Ken Smith up here. All right. For Katie Poor. The journey, the pilgrimage, is a voyage traveled by only one. After the group has paddled the long canoe, the lone traveler loads her gear and takes the portage with a spade, a hoe, and seeds to make her new garden grow. End poem.
Great read, Daniel. And what did you think, Weaver?
Well, talk about short and sweet. This is definitely both. Wow, this is so clever. Look at that picture as well. A voyage traveled by only one after the group has paddled the long canoe. That's wonderful. It just gives you those mind pictures that I love. You know, it's all there. But I love this, that last stanza with a spade and a hoe and seeds to make her new garden grow. So that is the whole purpose of this wonderful voyage. This is our life. We strive to make our garden grow. Yeah, best pilgrimage ever, I reckon. Beautifully written and a wonderful brevity, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Thomas, what are your thoughts?
I have to agree. It strikes me as sort of brevity of a poem.
And the idea that, you know, the journey is hard. It has its portage, but in the end, what's the goal?
Use a spade and a hoe and seed to make her new garden grow, because that's what gives purpose to our life.
I thought it was really a nice, short, sharp piece, and enjoyed it. Thanks.
Absolutely. Great comment. And, I like it, too. You know, it speaks to the voyage that, you know, our forebears had of, you know, traversing the regions by canoe and then, you know, with a spade and hoe and seeds to make her garden grow. You know, they set in and made home, which is a beautiful thing. So I thought it was wonderful. And Daniel, what did you think?
I did, too. I think it's to me, it was kind of like a metaphor for, you know, all the hard work you do, everything you do, it's just to get that garden, tend your garden, right? Basically, just have your home, have your life, right? I mean, I've always said the only thing that a person needs is, a warm bed, meaning a place to stay, a full belly, meaning food, and then you don't even need this, but to survive, but it's something you need, you know, the love of a good family. And that's, everything else is extra in life. So, you know, all the hard work, everything you do is that stereotype of, you know, I'm just trying to put food on the table, right? Just trying to feed the family. It reminds me of the book Candide as well, too, which kind of, you know, talks about that sowing your garden and you know, everything in life kind of revolving around just that, the garden as the metaphor for, you know, taking care of your life. So, yeah, I thought it was great and a nice little metaphor for just kind of life itself of the journey and you know, what the outcome it should be. So excellent job. All right.
Great comment, Daniel.
Just like, thank you.
Okay.
All right.
Next up we have A Friday Back in August by Becky Upchurch. And I will give this a read. Hello, Becky. A Friday Back in August. This poem will bore, hoping use of metaphor will color story in more than black and white. But what story is there? I am alone, music playing, tears falling, flooding today like there will be no tomorrow. Tears don't drown the past. They're an endless spring, cold and clear, wells up and never dries. Does that make a story? Can I leave diction like dreams at the shore or cliff edge? Drop off a lover who listens to me while I attempt to fly away in a poem. Or walk a path made of yesterdays and be accompanied by hickory, weed, and dirt until tomorrow's headline story written in green dreams. Dream first, a story will follow. End poem.
Excellent read. And her author's notes simply say, I'm not sure about this one, but my photo. And the photo is great for those following along. It's just a path in the woods, which is always amazing to see. And I really like this a lot. I thought this is a lot of fun and very deep. I really like how the beginning was the rhyme. So this poem will be bore, hoping use of metaphor will color a story in more than black and white. And so it's she's almost like saying, you know, hey, I'm going to draw here comes the poem and trying to entice you with rhyme. Just the way she kind of goes after that, which is a metaphor for her life. I'm alone, music playing, tears falling. But I did like tears don't drown the past. They're an endless spring, cold and clear. The well never dries up. Does that make a story? And that is interesting where there really isn't any end to sadness, and tears don't drown the past. They can help you deal with them, so they don't get rid of the past, right? They can just help you kind of fix it. So I thought that was really interesting. Dreams first, and first a story will follow, and how great is that, right? That if you can dream it, you can do it. And that's where we go first, is get those dreams out there and then follow the dreams. And then you can actually have a story from that as well, too. So I thought it was a lot of it was fun to read, but it was also very deep and beautiful. And I do know, I'm sure about this one, Becky. I think it was great and well-deserved front page pick. So excellent job. Let's go to Gray.
Well, I just want to say that the photo reminds me of a path that was down near the Arrington River on Vancouver Island, which I found a Bigfoot print, and I was with my brother and I showed him, and I watched the blood drain from his face, you know, as he was in shock, you know, in horror that something had a foot that big and, you know, it was that close to us, you know. So I got to give the photo kudos for taking me back to that moment in time. But no, it was a fantastic write. You did a beautiful job of reading it, Katie. But, you know, I like it. It speaks to walking on the path that, you know, our stories, our life. And so I thought it was an excellent write on that subject of the paths that lead us down the trail of our life. So a great write, Becky, and a fantastic read, Weaver.
Excellent, great, thank you. And wait, I got to hear a little bit more about this, because when I was a kid, I was fascinated with monsters and Bigfoot and Loch Ness and all this stuff, and I've come to believe that Bigfoot is fake, because I know some of the most famous ones have been told to be fake. You really found, and I believe you 100%, I'm fascinated. You really found a giant foot.
We did, yeah. It was barefoot, and it had to be a size, I don't know, 13 to 15. You know, it was just massive. And it was barefoot, you know, it took one stride, you know, across the trail that is in that picture. And, I mean, you know, that had a leg span of probably, you know, 7 feet or something, 6 feet between footsteps. Yep. So, yeah, you know, it was definitely haunted my brother. He was petrified at that point.
Well, so it was like one footprint in the middle, like going across the path.
Yeah.
Wow. You honestly just made me a believer again. Now I'm fascinated. Ah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
It's true. It's true. I mean. Go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, it was definitely hard hitting, and very real. You know, like I said, it happened for sure.
Yeah, of course. I 100% believe you. You know, I'm, unless Shaquille O'Neal was walking barefoot in the woods there, you never know who what that was. So, That's a very interesting mystery. So cool. All right, sorry.
Yeah,
I had to diverge because you drove my interest to that.
Sorry. It was early in the morning, so there was nobody, you know, that could have been there to fake this thing.
Right.
And it was just some secondary logging road that, you know, had some early morning mud on it. And, yeah, there's this footprint.
Wow. Well, there you go. Hey, I always thought with this day and age, you know, the satellite cameras would find these things, but stuff's still hidden around, you know. There's still a lot of unexplored parts of the world. So, all right, you got me believing now. I love it. I love that stuff. I do. It's true. All right, cool. Let's keep going here. And I'm already lost.
Oh, Thomas,
by the way. I don't think yeah, we never heard from Thomas yet. Go ahead, Thomas.
I believe everything and believe in nothing. Keep your options open. I love the fact that Jesus says, but what story is there? Because my career in psychology, if you read what are called neuropsychologists who study how the brain works and affects your behavior, our brain is designed to create a story of everything. That's how we hold meaning. And she captures it so well in the way that she talks about, you know, if I add up where my life is right now, it comes to this. But yet, you know, the tears don't dry in the past. And what's in front of me? What will I make of it? What's possible? And it's really nice that she ends on a very strong positive note, because dream first, the story will follow. It's really, we're creators. So what do you want to create? And I just think that gives the poem a more than just a positive lilt. It makes a really powerful statement about who we are, who we be as humans. And I think this is great. So thank you very much.
Great comment. Thank you, Thomas.
Thanks, Thomas. And Weaver.
Well, first of all, Gray, I'll be off up to Loch Ness tomorrow to see if I can find that there monster. You've convinced me.
Yeah.
I'll send you pictures. Okay. I don't know what it eats, but I'll find something. Okay. But this is an amazing piece of poetry. It's brave, clever. It had me all the way through. I don't think there's a stanza that I didn't go, oh my goodness, at. That last line, of course, is wonderful. But you've got that first stanza. Oh, my goodness me. That is just, this poem will bore, hoping use of metaphor will color a story in more black and white. That's just very clever. And I enjoyed all of it. It's sad, but it does have a bit of hope at the end. If you can dream it, you can do it kind of thing. Yeah, I thought it was very clever, very well written. And thank you so much for sharing that with us, Becky.
Excellent. All right. Well, we will dream of the next one, and we will have a story. I don't know where I'm going with this. I'm just trying to say, let's put the next one up.
Got to find different ways to say the same thing. I understand it.
Yeah, I'm looking around. I fail sometimes, but hey, you got to take a chance, right?
I do the same now with everything, text or whatever I go, and I've used that word already. Let's change that around a bit. This poetry thing really gets into your head.
It does.
Now we have Shattered Mirrors Scream, by King. And Daniel, would you like to read this for us, please?
Of course. Let me get it here. It's coming up. Give me a second. Here we go. Shattered Mirrors Scream. Shattered mirrors hurt like gravel rash rips, open bloodied knees. Your back seen in shattering mirrors as eyes snap a last Kodak before a door slams shut. Raining razor blades rip in each heartbeat and nails drawn from ruby quips. Time returns blunt razor burns to red-shaven cheeks and nails regrow pink again. As mending itches, the scratch scars form snow tracks through men's emollients and lanolin cream. Coarse nails, soothing scratches, while shattered mirrors still scream. End poem. And in the author's notes, it said, write a poem for a contest, what comes from woe and sorrow? Quote from Poe.
Great read, Daniel. And, you know, I enjoyed it. It had fantastic imagery. You could feel the pain and the horror that is felt by raining razor blades ripping each heartbeat and nails drawn from rooted quips. Time returns, blunt razor burns to red-shaven cheeks, and nails regrow pink again. You know, when you're that horrified and petrified that, that's what happens. You know, you scratch yourself in response to what is scaring you. That's a pretty powerful thing. So I thought it was a fantastic write, and you did a beautiful read of it, Daniel. And Weaver, what are your thoughts?
Wow, this made the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. That second stanza really, your back seen in shattering mirrors as eyes snap a last Kodak before a door slams shut. And I just went, whoa, that is deep and scary. I think this is wonderfully written. It really gives you the measure of the pain. And all right, yes, the scars heal and nails grow back and lanolin cream will make your skin look a bit better, but it's going to happen again, because if it happens once, it happens again. And I think that's very, very scary. Beautifully written. I mean, it really got the point across to me. And it was very well done. Thank you so much for sharing that.
Great comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Thomas, what are your thoughts?
Well, for me, this kind of poem, excuse me, for me, this kind of poem is difficult to read and to hear. It reminds me too much of the abuse cases I worked with, where they question, what's the point to healing? It's only going to happen again. And the whole image of the fractured mirror is like, me a lot of ways a kid who's looking at it and all they're seeing is all the fractures in the mirror, every one of them a symbol of what's wrong with them, what's not right with them, why they're not worth valuing. And so this actually for me is very painful and difficult to listen to. I'll sort of end there.
Yeah,
great comment,
agree.
Thomas. Thank you. Sorry, Pat.
Yeah, I agree, Thomas, with that. It's that image of the shattered mirrors. You know, you're trying to look in the mirror to find yourself, but all you're seeing is pieces and parts, right? You're not seeing the whole thing. Time returns blunt razor burns to red shaven cheeks and nails regrow pink again. So. You try to regrow to be innocent again, but then, you know, as Thomas said, it kind of comes back again, you know, and it is hard to kind of see once that mirror's been shattered, once your own image of yourself has been kind of broken up, it's really hard to see that hole again. All you can see is the broken part. You know, memory is a crazy thing. It's that innocence lost, right? It's one of the most horrific things is when innocence is taken away. You see these young, innocent kids who are just, they don't know the horrors of the world. And once it's in your mind, once it's there, you just can't get it away. You know, once you know the horrors and that shattered mirror, once you see yourself as that broken, it's hard not to see it differently again. And I think that Kang really did a great job in capturing the picture and capturing you know, the horrors of war and sorrow, like the author's notes say. So, great. Awesome. And we're going to keep on. Thank you. And we can keep on keeping on here.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Right.
What do you think, Weaver?
No problem. I'm going to be going into open poetry now because there's only a few. And after they're read out, we can go back to the front page picks. But I just wanted to know if Thomas had one that he'd like to throw onto the board, if you've got one you'd like to share with us.
Yeah, here, hold on a second. I'll go.
I'll just go ahead and put the next one up. You just take your time. I'll just put the next one up. We'll be fine. Plenty of time. The next one we have in open
poetry. And Weaver, just to say, I think Thomas actually has one of a front. He's got a front page pick.
Towards
the bottom.
Yeah, I have been kind of told what to do next, so I'm just doing what I'm being told. And I'll get back to the front page pick. And I'll. Yes, Gray?
No, that's it.
Okay. You'll get there. Don't worry. We'll get there. Okay, the next one up is Beats Between Two Chests by Hope Soul. I will read this, and I hope I do my best for you, Hope. Beats Between Two Chests. Tears chase away heated moans, for after the fact you write sweet poetic words that moves me to kiss my pillowcase with salty waters that shadowed your reflection. I've missed you so much that I've started to say, I need you, for I don't wish to jab you with a dagger or feeling of inadequacy. Needing sounds fuller, deeper, almost compares to what it is I feel, but that word carries but a mere river pebble stone. For each moment that caresses our fingers, runs down your curls, slides down my temple, warms on the stove of my apple cheeks, catching at the corner of these tender lips, it tastes better than whatever stars are born from. So I'll open my mouth to this time and again. I helplessly dare to articulate what burns in these bones for you, wrapping it in Christmas foil, topping with festive bows. I douse gasoline all over it, tossing the ass end of a Cohibi cigar at the base. Watch as it gets eaten with vermilion frames. Maybe then I can capture what lives and dies for you. In this wretched flesh behind the breasts where you keep the chimney happily fed with thick red wood. End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver.
Awesome. Absolutely. Yeah, I like the. I've been watching Hope a lot write these really interesting, where you know she forms the words in these, and I always try to see what she's trying to form. And to me, it almost looks a little bit like a candle, but I'm bad at seeing what she does. So, if you're around Hope, let me know what that form is that you're doing. She's so great at love poems, and you know, the Beats Between Two Chests, just having that. A deep connection to her love, which I do believe is Nuno, and I like the ending metaphor of the fire. Where is it here? So maybe I can capture what lives and dies you this in this wretched flesh behind the breast where you keep the chimney happily fed with thick red wood. So that fire in the heart for her. And, you know, starting off with missing so much, I miss you so much that I started to say, I need you, for I don't wish to jab you with a dagger of feeling inadequate. So that missing of that she has there, and then just looking for that fire, wanting to, you know, still being able to feel it, even though they're far away, but wanting that connection of the fire. So beautiful as always, like I said, she's a master at the... At the deep love poems, at the longing, at the intense loving passion, and it's always a pleasure to listen to hers. And I would say let's go to Thomas.
Well, to me, she sums up her feelings about this right there in the stand, but tears chase away, or after the fact, before they kiss my phone. I still carry you with me in every possible. And then, you know, that I've missed you so much that I started to say, I need you. And yet she's feeling her own senses of inadequacy, her own feelings of, I mean, I've watched. I know when I was younger, I destroyed many a beautiful relationship because it was too good for me to be part of it. And she does a beautiful job of speaking to that in the rest of the poem and making it a really striking almost like a horror story to how, you know, it's all going to go up in flames. There really is no other possibility. It's a very striking thing.
Thanks, Thomas. Let's go to Gray.
Yeah, you know, I always love Hope's poems to Nuno. You know, there's such love and passion between those two that you can feel in each one of their writes that they share for each other. And as a world, we get to peer in on their relationship, which is a powerful love and outstanding, you know, relationship to view from the outside. The love that exists between those two is palpable. So, and I really enjoyed her metaphors. They're steep and rich. So a great write and a fabulous read, Weaver.
I agree. It's always fun to hear them kind of go back and forth. And so usually they're on the show. So if you guys are listening sometimes they're on the show in the background. So if you guys are listening, you know, definitely come on if you can later. And yeah, it was a fabulous read by Kate. And when you were reading it, what did you think?
Oh, I've always enjoyed both their work and the, as you say, the back and forth of how much they care for each other and how difficult it is when they're apart. I mean, that must be awful. That first stanza made me really sad for her because it's heartbreaking. Tears chase away heated moans, for after the fact, you write sweet poetic words that moves me to kiss my pillowcase with salty waters that shadow your reflection. Oh, that's lovely. As always, you know, I feel rather like a voyeur reading this because this is the deepest, most intimate feelings. And it's wonderful that you can share them with us because it has to come out somehow, somewhere, has to be said or written down because otherwise you just explode with it. So, yeah, wonderfully done. Thank you so much, Hope.
Yeah, and I could be totally wrong. I think she is in New Zealand and he is in Portugal. So that is quite a long-distance relationship there. So hopefully every once in a while they get to see each other.
I'm pretty sure she's in Texas.
Oh, she
and
is.
He's in
why
Portugal.
Why did I think she was in New Zealand? That's a little closer.
I'm not too sure.
It's a little easier to get to. So, all right, Texas is... That's a little closer, but still very far away.
Yeah. Oceans apart.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, next one up is Fear of a Child by Nuno Cardoso. And Gray, would you read this for us, please?
Sure. Fear of a Child by Nuno Cardoso. I fear not the dark like a child. Instead, I dread silence, not the one you bestow upon me, but the one I accidentally gift you. My noggin races. It thinks of gifts of God, given with a pinch of vinegar and salt, drowning me in my own fear of not hearing you in the morning. I love you. End poem.
Excellent read, Gray. And there's a lot. There's a lot in this. Actually, this is one of my favorites that Nuno's written. I know this is what he was talking about, but I fear not the dark. Instead, the silence. And silence is again. I know this wasn't necessarily what he's talking about, but that the silence to me is something. Is something to fear because it's when your mind can take over, right? A lot of times, and I do it all the time, I try to have background noise or I keep myself busy because I'm more scared of what my mind's going to do when there is silence. You know, what am I going to start thinking? I just got worrying about things and thinking about what I did in the past and what has to come. And, you know, to need a break, it's that silence when you can get attacked. But the silence he's talking about, which is the love for Hope, is the fact when she's not there. Right, so it's not the dark, because if they were there together and sleeping, it would be, you know, they would be in the dark together. But it's the silence when she's not there, and you know, I understand that too. You know, I've been with my wife for many years since 1988, and not we're very rarely away, but, you know, I go away sometimes for work. I have to go away in January, and I remember last year when I went away, you know, you wake up and she's not there. It just doesn't happen with us, you know. We're always there, and it's a weird feeling, you know, not having her there. So I can imagine, too, it is that silence of her not being there that's the hard thing to take. And I thought this was just very, very beautiful. And what a great love tribute for both of them, kind of talking back and forth in the poetry. I mean, it's almost making me tear up how beautiful it is that these two, you know, the way they communicate and communicating on here through poetry, right? Poetry to each other is such just an amazing way. And both of you, thank you so much for sharing that with us. It's always a special part of our show when we can read the two of you guys together. In the poetry, so keep them coming. Absolutely. And let's go to Thomas.
We're losing you, Thomas.
Oh, I read this a while back when they commented on one of mine, and I found myself thinking about the different kinds of silence. I mean, I'm a Quaker. I sit in silent meeting. And at the same time, I totally understand that sense of an emptiness that occurs when you had your house filled with the person you love. I mean, I remember how much it really hit me the first time my son and my wife went away together to some other member of the family to help. And I was there at the home front for like about a week while they were gone. Finding myself just missing sounds that need to be in the house that say they were home. I really like that second verse, you know, it thinks of gifts of God given with a pinch of vinegar and salt, drowning me in my own fear of not hearing you in the morning. That's a really striking line. It just sort of catches and sums it all up in a heartbeat.
Well said.
Absolutely. Well said. Kate.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my goodness. They just pull at your heartstrings, don't they? They're just such a sweet couple. And this, I thought, was wonderful. And I love that last line. So sweet. Yeah, beautifully done. And, you know, to be loved like that, it would be wonderful, wouldn't it? Well, you obviously, you know, you're happily married. But pretty done. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely, great comment. And I just said married. I didn't say happily. I'm joking. Of course I'm happily married. Of course I am. I'm joking. Of course I'm happily married. That was just
I was happily married three times. So cool.
There you go. See? Oh, you got three times? Three times the happiness I have then. There you go, right?
Yeah. Of course, I'm three times older than you, so there you are.
I don't think three times older. I would be. You'd be the oldest person to ever live if you were three times older than me. So, yeah, I don't think
that's true. But just think of the old age pension I'd have. Wow.
Well, there you go. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. That's right.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
All right, Greg. Oh. You got to read it.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoyed the title of it. And, you know, I fear not the dark like a child. Instead, I dread silence, not the one you bestow upon me, but the one I accidentally gift you. You know, when we're so caught up in our lives that we neglect the ones that we love, that's a haunting place to be, you know, because you realize the mistake that you've made leaving the one that you, that loves you alone. And, you know, the next, stanza is, my noggin races, it thinks of gifts of God given with a pinch of vinegar and salt, drowning me in my own fear of not hearing you in the morning. And then the penultimate stanza, I love you. You know, it's just a beautiful love letter to his expression of being out, being distant and, you know, aloof which has led to his own heartbreak. So I thought it was a tremendous write, and it was a pleasure to read it.
Very cool. Excellent, excellent. All right, do we have any more of the open poetry, or are we going back to the front page picks? Where are we going?
We have The Birdcage by Weaver of Dreams, which has a SoundCloud, which I will play.
We found this in an antique store. Do you remember? We almost bought two lovebirds. Then you were gone. White flowers are a monument to a heart no longer beating. When I stay very still, I almost hear your dear sweet voice chiding me, reminding me that I promised you I'd live on. But this broken heart is jagged, my love. Breathing hurts.
Oh, Weaver, that was amazing. And what a great read you did on that. So heartfelt. We found this in it. Do you remember the, we almost bought the two lovebirds, then you were gone. What a longing for a love, right? Almost, to me, this is a remembrance of you, you know, and that happens. I got it, I mean, or what I pictured as just a random remembrance. And that happens, you know. I haven't, God forbid, I don't even want to talk about it with my wife, but I've lost people, my parents and so forth. And you go through life, but for whatever reason, sometimes they just come in your mind and you feel these things, right? So I can imagine you sitting there and this comes into your mind and you're just we say we're almost here still for street voice. And you can hear that sometimes. You can hear the person talking to you when you just have these memories, and it can get to you where you know, like you said, even breathing hurts. What an amazing heartfelt brevity. Awesome job. Let's go to Gray.
Yeah, you know, you speak of the love that you've had, and this is a testament to that love that you've had. And, you know, I enjoyed it. It was the longing is palpable, and the heartbreak is pure, which is tragic. So it was a beautiful write and an excellent read. Thank you so much for sharing, Weaver.
Thank you.
Thanks, Gray. And Thomas.
Hi. Excuse me. I really like the "When I stay very still, I almost hear your dear sweet voice chiding me, reminding me," because it speaks so much of those that have loved us, whether it's one, or fortunate, maybe more than one, but who has held us so close that when they died, something inside of us did too. And only because you know that that's what they want for you. But never stops crying or hurting. And while it gets softer and it may fade into a distance to a certain extent, whenever something happens that reminds you the hurt is still as fresh as the day it happened. And you capture all of that really gently, but really with a great deal of strength in this very quick, short piece. Stunning, right?
Thanks, Thomas. Anything to add, Weaver, about your poem?
No, my dear, not really. This picture was the prompt for this. And it just seemed so right to put it down. Yeah, that was it. And I enjoyed writing it. Thank you.
Excellent. Very cool. I think we have one more by Thomas, a random poem.
Do we? Oh, good. I'll just refresh. I just put up his front page pick. So, anyways, I've got to go down. Excuse me. I'm going down. Elevator's going down. Oh, hang on. All right, there we are. Got it. Cool. One moment. Just bear with me. It's an age thing. I'm getting slower. No, I'm not.
No.
No, I'm not.
Spring,
here we are.
Spring spring chicken, you still are.
Oh, good.
Things get, you get slower. Things just take longer.
That's right.
Yes, that's true. Okay, here we have A Turn of a Leaf by Thomas. If you care to read that for us, please.
Okay. A Turn of a Leaf. I heard her in the silence, like leaf fall, the softness, a rustle, the breath of wind causes the nape to feel a tickle. There are footprints. I can trace them on my heart. The matters of their heart, I refer to seasons. See if, after all the joy of spring, the sizzle and feast of summer, those colors, flags of winter's coming, trees always shake themselves free, let the apparel of the season fall. It is about how we handle winter, how we decide to melt the ice. What device? If it's just hibernation as a form of deliberation, maybe in the pause of snow, the movement beneath blankets, a fire blown into flame, we discover is spring all over again.
Great job, and I like this one a lot. And I think if I know you, you date your poems, which is great, which means you wrote this one yesterday, which is pretty cool. I love seeing a brand new one. The Turn of a Leaf, so the matters of heart, I refer to seasons, wait to see after the spring, the joyous spring, feast of summer, those colors. Comparing your, you know, your loves to the seasons. And I think that's pretty interesting. It's how we handle winter, how we decide to melt the ice, about what device for hibernation. I think that's a really interesting way to kind of talk about it. And there's different ways you can talk about that, right? You can say the seasons as the evolution of your relationship or matters to the heart, or you can think of the seasons as the kind of the different things that you have to go through, because it's cyclical, right? It's not necessarily beginning and end, but it can be cyclical as well too, where you just kind of go back, going back and forth, good, bad times, summer times, you know, winter times. I heard her in the silence, like a leaf fall, the softness. I think that's amazing. Like, well, how much softer is just that falling leaf, you know, and leaves, especially when they first fall. I mean, you know, I'm in New England here, right? We've got all these, it's raking time, and you know, once the leaves are down, they're crackly and cringly. When they first fall, leaves are very soft, right? And that falling leaf is like, there's nothing softer or silenter or more quiet and just tender than that. So a lot of great imagery here and an amazing feel to this, Thomas. I enjoyed it a lot. I thought it was great.
Okay.
And let's go to Kate.
Oh, I agree. That first stanza, I liked it so much. It's just wonderful. The softness, a rustle, the breath of wind caused the nape to feel a tingle. There are footprints. I can trace them on my heart. I thought that was, if I could have said it properly, it would have probably been a lot better. I do apologize. But I thought it was lovely. And looking at the matters of the heart, seasons, of course, you have that wonderful spring in your step at the beginning of a relationship. It's wonderful, those hormones all buzzing about. And then you have the heat of summer. But then winter comes. After autumn, winter comes. And I like that a lot. I thought it was very well done. Thank you. Made me think about relationships in a different way, funnily enough. I don't know why it does, but it really does. And so thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah, it actually did to me too. It actually made me think a little bit more. I thought a unique way. I haven't really heard of relationships like this, so I thought it was a really unique way, which is always great to hear. Greg, your thoughts?
Yeah, you did a beautiful job of reading it, Thomas. But, you know, I like it. You know, it speaks to the seasonal changes in a relationship. And maybe in the pause of snow, the movement beneath blankets, a fire blown into flame, we discover it's spring all over again. You know, that's a fantastic writing and an excellent read, Thomas. So thank you for sharing.
Thomas, anything you want to say about it?
Well, I just, this one was tricky to me because the first stanza almost stands by itself, and I wanted to read it mostly just to see how it came across to others, because it seemed to hold together as a whole piece. So it answered some of the questions I had in my own head. I don't know about you, but there are times when I sometimes will throw out the complete first stanza, or find myself reading a poem and suddenly going, you know, I don't need this section in there at all. It's nice to know that it has a sense of wholeness. I like the idea of trying to use the seasons not just as the beginning and end, but the sense that we have to go through all these things, and we continue to go through all these things. Maybe not always in sequence, but, you know, it's part of love is knowing how to survive the good and the bad.
Yeah, beautiful.
Absolutely. All righty. Now what do you want to do, Kate? You're the boss.
Oh, don't you believe that for a second. This is Silent Harassment by Gerald E. Green. Now, Thomas, I will be putting your front page pickup in a couple of poems. Can you hang around for a little while longer?
I can hang around for a little while.
Thank you. Great. So we have Silent Harassment, and this has a SoundCloud.
Okay, I will play that.
Thank you.
Silent Harassment, written and read by Gerald Green. I know you're there, but I've outsmarted you again today. It's dark, and the sun won't reveal your naked form for one more hour, allowing me to be myself, safe from taunt and titillation. My mind is free to think of other things, ideas flowing, organizing on their own, entertaining with unique possibilities. But my attention still drifts back to you, who stand alone, dependent. It's been 3 months since my hands felt your sturdy limbs, 90 days of distance between us, driving us apart like distant lovers. This battle for control was your idea, expecting attentions beyond your station, demanding what prudence rejects and politeness scorns. I hate you on days like yesterday, sunny days when one should strengthen relationships and make time for each other. But I ignored you purposely and won the day, satisfied. And yet, there you are, standing in the dark, waiting for my ministrations that refuse to come. I could destroy you, and maybe I should. No one would care. Life would go on as before. Peace would reign and sleep would be undisturbed. Love, however, prevents the unthinkable, forcing truce and reconciliation. Days pass and truth pushes itself like an ocean wave on a pebbled beach. Today, perhaps, I will gather my tools and complete what remains of you, the deck on the back of my house.
Great read, as always. He's got an amazing voice. Gray, I don't know if we can start with you.
I really like the twist of it. You know, it sounds like he's speaking to a lover, but he's actually speaking to his project of a deck on the back of his house, which is a fantastic way to really hit the reader with the unexpected. So, but yes, if you leave those joists for too long, they will warp and twist beyond recognition. So, yeah, you better get that deck finished, Gerald. great write and a fabulous read as well. Thank you for sharing.
Of course, yeah. Kate?
Oh, my. It was so well done. Oh, my goodness me. I had, honestly, like everybody else, you think, oh, no, distant lovers, how terrible. But that is just so, so, so clever. Well done. Oh, I love a twist in the tale. I really do. Ah, thank you so much for sharing that. It made me smile. So thank you very much, Gerald. Well done.
Yeah, it was really interesting. It was almost like this little twist that he, you know, related it to a person, but then the, you know, it would turn out to be his deck, so there's almost like a little bit of humor there. And the silent harassment. So if you take it as a person, right, silent harassment can be somebody who, if they're not talking to you, you're not there, but his silent harassment is the deck is quiet, right, but it's staring at him. So you go out in there and look at that. It's like, you know, you didn't finish me yet. You're not done. And, you know, that can definitely be projects. You know, the house I have an old house, and I'm trying to fix things up, and it does bug me. Every time I walk by something, I'm like, oh, still haven't fixed this yet. I got to fix it. You know, it's like I got to do something down my cellar. I actually don't go down cellar as much as I possibly can because I don't want to look at what I got to fix. Makes me think, why am I not living in an apartment? I don't have to worry about anything. But, yeah, I thought that was
yeah.
fun. Thomas.
Well, I should start just by saying that I firmly believe there's nothing wrong with a honeydew if it involves buying a new pool. But to own a house is to own a constant job needing to be done. It's never finished. And I love that he, by the time he got to about the fourth line, I was like, this isn't about a human being. It doesn't feel right. But and I kept questioning, what is this about? Who is this about? Well, you know, where is this person? Because it obviously wasn't a lover, at least to me. Which I thought, because he did a really nice job of saying it's something I'm tied closely to. But it's a thing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Almost. It's been 3 months since my hands felt your sturdy limbs. But driving us apart like distant lovers, you know, the battle for control. Yeah, I mean, I broke my basement into thirds. I have finished a third of it. I'm very proud of that third. It's the laundry room, the weight room, and sauna and a bathroom. But there's still two-thirds of a basement to haunt me every time I go down to do laundry.
Yeah.
It's a devilish thing. And he yeah. captures it really, really nicely, you know, but I ignored you purposely and won the day. Like, say, I'm exhausted after 3 days of doing leaves in my yard, and the wind blew, and dirt in the yard's covered again. But, you know, today I did nothing, and it's satisfying. I totally got that, but I ignored you purposely and won the day, satisfied. He caught it right on the money there, you know. And yeah, there are times when you feel like you should just tear up everything you've done because it's never going to be quite the way you really want it to be.
So another part of it says you have to just finish it because it's got to get done.
And so the ending, those last seven lines are so perfectly on the mark. And he does it with that wry, sort of self-satisfied sense of humor of, I kind of fooled the deck and I kind of fooled you for a while, but in the end, it's got to get done.
It's well.
Well, well said and well, well done. What more can I say?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Absolutely.
Great. I've already
great comment, Tom.
Again. You haven't commented yet, right?
No. I mean, yeah, I have.
Oh, you have? Okay. I'm sorry. I forgot. Forgot. I'm losing it. I get 25. I can hold it together. 25 more minutes. I can hold it together. But I'm already forgetting things. All right, cool. So then we can see what is next.
Yes. And next we have Marriage by Aloy Lunin, I think is the name. And this is a SoundCloud as well, Gray.
Okay. Thank you, Weaver.
Marriage. My brain melts like cheese, and I sit there stupefied, wondering whomever is going to be the mouse, laughing to myself. I ain't never seen a mouse. Heard them scurry around in the attic. It's not my attic, though, and I'm all tied up, literally. So I guess that makes me a mouse trap. Traps are meant to keep things in, though, so why is my consciousness trying to escape? I think I heard it once before. I had said something about getting my shit together. Well, I have an answer for that at least. Just gotta get those hands loose. There's a bottle of rye in my fridge. I'm not that stupid to not have plans for my death wish.
Wow, that was a great read. And unless I'm reading it wrong, there might be a divorce coming soon over here in this marriage. It doesn't sound like there's necessarily happiness there. And you know, it can be. It's, you know, marriage is very interesting because you are kind of giving up your life almost, and it's something you got to realize. It's a partnership. It's a compromise, right? It's, you know, you can't just do anything you want because you have another person that you're sharing it with. So, you know, him, it seems like he's feeling tied up. Like this is, you know, it's he's feeling the noose, the tying this, the ropes, as opposed to you know, the good things about it. But it is because you can't necessarily just do anything, right? You got to share things. You can't just eat, you know, you can't just eat dinner whatever you want. You have to share it with somebody. Okay, what do you want for dinner tonight? What do you want to do? You have to have a partnership. That's a constant thing. So, this doesn't sound like a positive marriage in my opinion. So, hopefully, Olin, this is not biographical. Hopefully, it's a fantasy. But still very well written and a nice poem. Interesting poem, interesting metaphors. Thomas, what do you think?
Well, I in some ways this sort of teases me because between my first and second marriage, I discovered that there was no point in dating women my age hadn't been married. They didn't understand compromise. They'd been living on their own for so long and were so used to doing everything their way that they couldn't understand why I wasn't going to agree with them about how they things should be done because they'd already figured out what the best way to do things were. It didn't work. and I said it because he catches stuff about when he's talking about the mouse or about getting it together that are spot on. But also speak to how much he may not be ready to compromise. And he may be his own victim. And you know, it's like that bottle of rye in my fridge. I'm not that stupid. I cannot have plans for my death wish. I mean, you know, because it is. I mean, you have to give up. I mean, you know, and if you think you're going to, well, you know, there's got to be another marriage down the road, or this one's going to end pretty quickly one way or the other. It's just, you know, that's why I said, you know, love's great, but you got to know how to have a relationship. And he just sort of catches it in his own sort of morose fashion, enough so that I find myself laughing about a third of the way through his piece.
So. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, there's it doesn't seem like a match made in heaven over here. But you're right, it can get interesting with, you know, different people. The more somebody is single and I watch, you know, I have a lot of people that work for me in my job and I have some people who are old, some people are younger and some are older and haven't been married, and I do think like you get so stuck in your ways, and I watch some of these younger kids who are now getting in their 30s that, you know, have been now, you know, on their own for so long and getting in their ways. And I wonder, like, geez, you know, how, if you, they start going to somebody, how's that going to work when now they have to all of a sudden, you know, compromise. I was, you know, I've been with my wife since I was in college, so we've always kind of, you know, shared things together, and it's just it's natural to me. But yeah, it's a, you know, some people maybe don't realize it is a compromise, you know. So it's and I think a lot of people realize that now. You know, I don't want to insult anybody with religious, however you are, but I think there's more people, you know, back in the day, right? It was a lot less accepted when people were living together before marriage, and now it's almost accepted now. Like, you almost want people to do it now. You want young kids to live together beforehand so that they can figure out, is this really going to work? Because there's a big difference between dating and actually living together. That's a big difference. You know, if you're dating, you can go home and have your privacy, right? You can be there. But when you're living together, you're now sharing everything. And you gotta, you know, make sure you have that compromise. I think the key is, you know, caring about the person that you're more concerned with their happiness than yours. So you're okay giving it up because you want to see them happy. That can be kind of the key. You know, but everybody's different. There's a lot of independent people that marry that they have their independent lives and they don't. You know, my sister is her husband. They love each other together, but she goes out all the time with her friends. You know, he works kind of weird hours, so like 4 or 5 times a week she's out doing whatever. She goes on vacations without him. Not that she doesn't like him, but she just goes on vacations with her friends. So they have this kind of separate thing, and you know, it gives them their independence, but then they're also together. So there you go.
Yeah. Well, it's just like, I think it's real important for my wife to have her own interests and to have things that are real important to her. And I want to support her in them because that lets her keep growing. And I always say the way I knew that there was something wrong in my first marriage was the fact that I did more growing in the 2 years after the marriage than I did for the full 8 that I was in it. Yeah. And you know, and my first wife was a wonderful human being. We just weren't. We just were the wrong people together.
Yeah. And some, unfortunately, yeah, I get it. And sometimes you find that out too late, you know, it's that mix. I've told my son, you know, love is one thing, but what you have to find is a companion, you know, somebody that's going to be your partner. And like my wife and I are both a very private kind of independent people as well too. So we have our priorities. We don't spend 24 hours a day together. We've actually been on the 24-hour day plan, but, you know, we'll have, you know, I do this radio show, right, kind of by myself. She knows about it, obviously, but, you know, she's not part of it. And, you know, we have our times when we're kind of by ourselves as well, too, just to, you know, because you need that. We both kind of need that thing, but then we also spend time together, and you got to find that kind of mix, which is, it's hard to do. It's always, you know, it's work, but, you know, worth the work. If it's worth the work, then there you go. You're in a good one, but, yeah. Relationships are interesting. Anyway, okay. Two old guys here complaining about marriage. Let's keep going. Gray, what are your thoughts on all this?
Yeah, I liked it. You know, it was very engaging. You know, you really could feel the context of the right as you read through it, and you feel that struggle that he has with himself and the relationship. Especially with, there's a bottle of rye in my fridge. I'm not that stupid to have plans for my death wish. LOL. It was a fantastic write and a great read as well.
Absolutely. Kate, I don't think you commented yet, and we know you had how many marriages as well, too, so you might be able to relate to this as well.
Well, I'm not really the best person to ask about marriage because I don't do it too well. This is my third, and it's... lasted longer than the other two. I am housebound. I'm not able to get about. I can't walk very far. So I am looked after so wonderfully well that there's no way I can complain. Everything is done that needs to be done for me. So this is good, and I'm very lucky. And this particular poem is also very good. I really enjoyed it. I love that. First two lines, my brain melts like cheese. Oh, my goodness. So it was beautifully read as well, which I thought was very good. Lovely voice. But yeah,
excellent.
It's not an easy thing, relationships, so I can totally understand how this person feels, gentlemen, this gentleman feels wonderfully done. Thank you.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, great to hear you're in an awesome relationship. Well, you certainly deserve that. And he's the lucky one, I'm sure. He must make sure he understands he's the lucky one. And
thank you.
You are the one to, of course. And if you've been in 3 marriages, then what, you're the expert, right? So you are the one to ask. Oh, I'm an expert at marriage. I've been married 3 times.
Yeah, I just love wedding cake.
See, that's right. There you go.
Okay.
All right.
Next up, we have The Invisible Art by Thomas. Oh, Stillness, The Invisible Art by Thomas. Could you read this for us, please, Thomas?
Yeah, I hit a wrong button. So
it's okay. It's okay. You are fading, Thomas, you are fading in and out a little bit.
Is this right?
No, not quite. You can be very...
Okay, Stillness, The Invisible Art. They tell you... excuse me. Keep losing my voice. They tell you it is in a breath. The moment held by an exhale. The seconds drawn back like a curtain as you breathe out. Follow the tail end. Like a hunter on a scent. Feel the beast within. Become a sliver of stealth. Allows you to be part of the scenery. More importance than a blade of grass. As you disappear from notice. People who know, are still so the moment can kill them without interruption. The real dance. Live inside the note. The master of movement does not interpret. They become a revelation. Each step part of a sound without making any. The grace, a flow of heartbeats we feel in the tissue of our being. Stillness allows the spirit to be a pond, reflecting the rooted oak filled with the graceful flash of silver minnows as the silence of a day yet awakened is born in the heart.
Great read. Thank you. I don't know if anybody noticed, but kind of stillness and silence has been, we've had a few poems that had that type of, had that theme a little bit in there. So very interesting that from the front page picks that we happen to have these kind of themes in here tonight. And I like this a lot. This is actually one of my favorite ones you ever wrote, Thomas. Just so beautiful and philosophical and very deep with amazing directions that these took. I really like the end part. I think this is an important, you know, I talked before about silence being like a, you know, when the demons attack, right? Which it can be when you know, if you keep yourself busy, you're not thinking about things. But if when the silence comes, that's when your mind can kind of attack. But that's also the time when you can think, when you can be, you can actually kind of be aware, you know. And I think this type of a poem and this type of ideas is important in this, you know, flip to the next screen in 5 seconds society that we have, where it is a constant entertainment. You know, we could just look at the movies of today. You know, we all remember, we're all older and we remember the movies of the past. If you look at movies even from the 40s and 50s, where it's the talking head movies and things are slower. It's funny, if you guys remember the movie from the 80s, E.T., that was like this huge giant movie, right, this kid's movie. Everybody remembers it from who's in the United States, at least from their past. And I remember showing it to my son and watching it and being like, wow, this is actually, it's a good movie, but it's kind of slow. Like, it doesn't move as fast as I remember it did compared to, like, the movies of today, which I love. You know, I'm a big fan of the Marvel movies and all those things that are out now in Star Wars. I've grown up with that, but it's just a different, it's a whole different thing. And everything is like that. It's this, you know, going through Instagram, flipping, like, constantly, this constant entertainment. And there's not a lot of silence. There's not a lot of stillness in the world anymore. It's just a ton of information. I don't know if this is true, but I heard somewhere that if you go back to the, 1700s, we get more information in a week thrown at us than some people back in the 1700s had in their lifetime. You know, and what I'm talking about is, you watch television, just the constant input that you get of all this useless information that's coming at you with commercials and everything you're looking at, and you think of people just with these, in these log cabins that had a few books in their library and that was it. So not a lot of stillness, not a lot of silence, but the way you wrote about that, stillness allows the spirit to be reflecting upon. And I really don't think that we take enough time to think anymore. The last thing I'll say is that, because I could talk about this for forever, I've noticed that, right now I'm starting to see actually a lot of really great musicians. But if you go back to the vaudeville days, there were people who were virtuosos at multiple instruments, and they could sing, and they could juggle, and they could dance. And, you think about some of the greatest thinkers in the world, and I've argued that we still have those people today. And like I said, I'm seeing a lot of really good musicians, young musicians coming out. But, it seems to be less of a percentage of that. And I really think it has to do with the fact that we have so much input, so much things to do that we don't just sit around and spend time, thinking, which is what a lot of people used to do. That's what they did. They would tell stories and they would have time for reflection that we don't have anymore. All right, hold on. Bang. There, that's me jumping off the soapbox. I will go back to let you guys talk. Sorry, this one really got my mind going. So, Kate, let's go to you.
Oh, this is beautifully done, Thomas. I really, really enjoyed this. Each of those stanzas kind of blew me away, actually. I think it's just so clever. The last stanza, as Daniel said, is a wowzer. And it's so true. Stillness does allow the spirit to be a pond reflecting the rooted oak. And I believe that people can't take that moment to allow their mind to relax. You don't have to have input all the time. You can be with yourself within your own mind, and it doesn't have to be constant stimulation. Silence. I think silence is wonderful. I can go a whole day without saying a word, believe it or not, and I love it. I love that stillness and that silence. I don't like bright lights. I don't like loud noises. I just like peace and tranquility. So this I really enjoyed. So thank you so much for sharing this with us. I'm so glad I got to see it.
Yeah, Kate, it's a great comment. I'm the same way. I have to talk all day long at work, so a lot of times I just want quiet. And that's actually how I discovered poetry. I take walks. I've said it before. I write when I'm walking. I literally talk into my phone. But that's me outputting, right? It's so much input throughout the day that when I take the walks, I'm kind of meditating, and I can output, and I output with the poetry instead of inputting, so it's kind of getting that yin and yang. Great. Go for it, man.
Yeah, you did a great job reading that, Thomas, but I enjoyed it. This is a lost art. The ability to stand still, I think, is a lost art, especially in modern life, with everything that is so programmed and everybody's glued to their phone or their computer or what's going on around them, that they don't know how to listen and to observe, which is what you have here. And I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you so much for sharing.
All right, great. And Thomas, anything to say about this one?
Well,
some of this comes out of, I hitchhiked across America more than once. I knocked off about 24,000 miles, I once figured it out.
Oh, wow.
Went to college in Oregon, and we lived in Washington, D.C. And I was, my father was an officer in the Navy, but with six kids, not a lot of money, you know. So I saved money by hitchhiking out there. There's things you discover. In the moment, time stops, and all of a sudden you become part of forever. And that's one of the benefits of meditation and silence. The other, if you want to get a ride, the best way to get a ride is to absolutely fall in love with you with where you are, and don't hide your joy. People have to pick you up right away, one, because they want some of it, and two, because, you know, why should he be the only one getting all that? And people know. And the other is, if you do Tai Chi like I do, or and meditation, there is a thing about
illness in your and the rest of it would be a very long
Thomas, we're losing you. Thomas, can you hear us? Thomas?
Yes.
Oh, sorry, we lost you for a minute.
I can hear you. Well, it's tricky. I think my phone cover, because it's waterproof, sometimes impedes sound getting across.
Ah, okay. Excellent. Hey, well, I get your next assignment. You need to write your memoirs. I would love to read a story of, like, the detailed story about hitchhiking across the country. That must be. You must have some amazing stories about that. So, write an autobiography. I'll be the first one to buy it.
Yeah, my son says I need to write an autobiography. I think you're all crazy.
Yeah, you totally. I mean, you know, this must have been the '60s. You hitchhiked.
Yeah, I graduated from high school in '68, and okay. Lost a year and a half to a motorcycle accident. So it was really from like about '68 to about '72, '73.
Oh wow! See, that would be interesting. You know, I don't know if you guys ever watched the show The Office. The American version, but there's this guy on there, Creed Bratton, that's his real name. He was part of the Grassroots, the band The Grassroots. And I actually met him a couple of times, and he was talking quick. He actually did this. He hitchhiked across America, then he hitchhiked across Europe and just started playing in bands. And I'm like, man, you got to write a book about that. That just must be, you know, amazing. So, that type of stuff fascinates me. Just the, you know, the insight you must have had just, you know, directly experiencing the, you know, from a, you know, not in a car or a plane, but actually walking across the country. Very cool. Very cool. Well, we only have 1 minute left, so I think, Gray, it might be time to wrap it up.
Yep. I'd like to thank you, Daniel and Weaver, and thank you so much, Thomas, for calling in to hang out with us. It's been a wonderful night of poetry, and much love to you all.
That was wonderful. Have a great night.
Yeah, thank you, everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Have a great night. Take care.
Good night, everybody.
Good night, Weaver.
Good night, my dear. Good night, Daniel. Good night, Thomas. Good night, John Boy.
We'll see you later.